Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, if you listen to Sports Day Tampa Bay, you get a little knowledge. And as we said in the pod yesterday, Dave Canales, the Bucs offensive coordinator, was very confident about his ability to land the Carolina Panthers head coaching job. And that is exactly what happened. Dave Canales, after 1 year and 1 year only of calling plays in the National Football League for the Buccaneers as their offensive coordinator, becomes the Panthers franchise's 10th head coach. He's only 42 years old. Now, this is a guy that spent 13 years with Pete Carroll in the Seahawks, was eventually promoted to quarterback's coach, passing game coordinator, passed over at least three times as offensive coordinator there, calls plays for 1 year, but he's reunited, and this is the key, reunited with Dan Morgan, who spent eight of those years in Seattle with Dave Canales. So, listen, what I've been saying all along during this process, and he had his second interview up there on Wednesday, was not to discount him. He's going to be their surprise candidate. He's probably going to be their head coach. And it's about relationships. That's how everybody gets their start in this league. It's very rare to go into some place where you know no one, as Dave Canales did when he came here as offensive coordinator, and then you land the job, especially a head coaching job. But Canales with Dan Morgan, if you're Dan Morgan, you're going, look, I want a guy who can what? Help Bryce Young. That's the number one goal of that franchise. They took Young number one overall, Heisman Trophy winner. A lot of teams would have done that, including Houston, who sort of fell into C.J. Stroud, who's likely the rookie of the year on offense. And Young struggled because their roster is bad. It's bad on offense. There's no weapons and there's no offensive line. Very difficult to take a young quarterback and make that transition. But they saw what he did as a quarterback's coach with Geno Smith in Seattle, resurrected his career, or was at least part responsible for it. He saw definitely what he did with Baker Mayfield, where he was even more responsible for that as a play caller, taking a guy that was on his fourth team in less than a year and a half and making him a 4,000-yard passer, 28 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, second only to Dak Prescott in terms of touchdowns to interceptions. And so more than all of that, and we can get into how much he struggled as a play caller early on, it's his positivity, right? Like that job, the head coaching job, and there's been a lot of coordinators who have, you know, gotten their attention and then eventually a head coaching job because they were good play callers. And some of them kept the play calling duties when they were named head coach. But this is not the same job. Like head coaching in the National Football League is about a few things. It's about what kind of staff you can hire, right? And can you get a bunch of guys that don't have agendas? I think that's what Dan Morgan is about. He knows he can trust Dave Canales. He knows that there's not going to be backbiting or backstabbing or any of that stuff, that they're going to pull, you know, they're going to row in the same direction. And so that's so important when you're trying to build a franchise, right? You have to have the same messages, the same agendas. And he knows that Dave Canales will do that. But Canales, it's his positivity, right? It's his zippity-doo-dah attitude every single day. He says he wakes up, it's first and 10, even though many days last season we know that it was fourth and 20. But he came in there, he worked hard, put in his offense, and you know, got to learn the players over the course of time, was obviously, you know, outmatched early on. But even after a 3-1 start, then they hit the 6 out of 7 losses, which is usually disabling, especially for a young coach and a guy who's never called plays before. So for Dave Canales to navigate all that, take Baker Mayfield, you know, turn him into a playoff-winning quarterback again, that's impressive on a resume. And more importantly, Dan Morgan probably bet that Canales would be successful, and he was right. And now that Morgan's in charge, Dave Canales is the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers, which is a giant leap. I mean, this is one of the biggest meteoric rises that I've seen in the National Football League in 1 year, which now leaves a big hole in the Buccaneers offensive staff. And you're talking about, you know, a guy that you're losing that Baker Mayfield liked, that Baker Mayfield played well for, played well under, helped him get a lot of the things that he had struggled with behind him. And now the Bucs need to find a new offensive coordinator, but they might not have to look very far. And that's because Thad Lewis, their quarterback's coach, has been one of these names that I've heard for several years, going back to when Bruce Arians was still coaching this team. Bruce thinks that he's a genius. He's told me that. You know, he was going to try to groom him to take over for Byron Leftwich, but Leftwich, of course, wound up getting fired after 1 year with Todd Bowles. But he did, you know, end up becoming the Bucs quarterback's coach last year. And if you're going to give Canales credit for Geno Smith, you've got to give Thad Lewis credit for Baker Mayfield. It's really the same thing. They're both quarterback's coaches. He played for 7 or 8 different teams at different levels in the National Football League. He was a 4-year starter at Duke, threw for over 10,000 yards, really bright guy. And so now the question for the Bucs is, do they want continuity but yet another inexperienced play caller, which is exactly what they just had, was an experienced play caller. But you keep some continuity in the offense and in the staff with a guy like Thad Lewis, or do you open it back up knowing that, you know what, this time around you may get better candidates? And that's how they ended up, quite frankly, with Dave Canales, because everyone else said no. Okay, if you look at this job a year ago versus what it is today, there's some similarities, but there also, you know, are not. I mean, in terms of when coaches came in here, they're looking at Todd Bowles thinking, no quarterback. The only guy under contract at that time when they hired a coordinator was Kyle Trask, and no one had ever seen Kyle Trask play in the National Football League. So at best, that was a giant projection and most likely not a guy you're going to win with. And then secondly, if Bowles is going to get fired, am I going to move my whole team down here, lose, and then I'm out of a job in a year? A lot of guys decided to stay with their current teams, even as quarterback coaches, right? So now, though, that, you know, Todd Bowles is seemingly much more stable, or at least has at least another year or two, you would think, after advancing to the NFC divisional playoff game, now you're going to get more people wanting to come here, perhaps wanting to work with Baker Mayfield with the success that he started to have, and maybe the pool's a little bigger. So maybe you expand it and don't just give it to Thad Lewis. However, it gets more confusing. But wait, there's more. Thad Lewis is suddenly coveted by the Raiders from Las Vegas. They have asked for permission. That's right. They've asked for permission from the Bucs to interview Thad Lewis, presumably for either a passing game coordinator or offensive coordinator's job. And so, you know, that might be a trip that he takes, or one that the Bucs don't need him to take, depending on their decision in terms of what they're going to do to replace Dave Canales. So the plot is thickened here just a bit. And, you know, if you just look at the Bucs offseason, okay, no Baker Mayfield, he's a free agent. You got to try to re-sign him. No Mike Evans, he's a free agent. You had an opportunity to re-sign him and didn't. He could be on the way out. Chris Godwin in his final season. Levante David, a free agent. You know, Tristan Wirfs, you probably need to offer an extension to, or he's going to play under his fifth-year contract. Antoine Winfield Jr. needs franchise. You have more salary cap money, but those are major positions, and especially when you're talking about a quarterback, some $30 to $40 million a year that you need to, you know, earmark for that quarterback position. And so a lot of things are different, and way too many things are up in the air for the Bucs right now. But it'll start by replacing Dave Canales, who, again, you know, home run higher in terms of results. Now, the other thing, and I'm not trying to besmirch Canales or his accomplishments, but it is whirlwind when you think about it, is I've heard this today on some places I don't need to mention, but it was like, oh my God, it's over. What are they going to do? I mean, this team's falling apart. If they don't have Canales, it's over. Listen, less than a year ago, nobody even, and I cover the league, nobody was talking about Dave Canales. And when you heard his name, they were like, who? Right? Oh, he's been where? For how long? You know, Russell Wilson was a quarterback out there. Obviously, Geno Smith. And so you had all this, you know, sort of the unknown factor with Canales. Now that he's been here, and you know, it was only a few weeks ago, it seems, that they started 4-7, lost 6 out of 7. Everybody wanted everybody fired. So let's not confuse losing Dave Canales with Bill Walsh retiring. And even then, George Seifert took over and they won 2 more Super Bowls. Okay? So is it a lack of continuity? In a way, whether he gets a head coaching job or not, when you have a defensive head coach, you better be prepared for this every 2 years. If you're successful. If you're not, then the coach gets fired and doesn't matter. But if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm also the head coach, guess what? I got to hire somebody to run my offense. If I win, most teams want the offensive coordinator as their head coach. Because why? Because the teams that hire head coaches have had bad years and they draft high and they get quarterbacks. And you want that head coach slash coordinator to be married up with your quarterback. So you're going to be, if you have success, you're going to end up losing a coordinator every 2 years, which is why, frankly, a lot of teams don't hire defensive head coaches for that very reason, because the quarterback position is that important. But they can find someone, and maybe he's already in-house. Maybe it is Thad Lewis. Maybe one of the guys that they interviewed, you know, a year ago, some of whom have become available again that probably had no interest in this job, you know, are looking for work now. So you might be able to get a couple of those guys to come in here and say, yeah, you know, I'm sorry I turned you down and went back to my team or whatnot, but, you know, I'm certainly available now. So that's going to be something to watch just to see who the Bucks bring in here because, you know, last year I want to say, I don't know, maybe 14 candidates for offensive quarter might have been through this place. I'm not exactly sure, but it feels like it was somewhere around that. But there's always good coaches, and you know, for the ones that like to default and say, well, who are they going to get that's any better? Where did Dave come from? Who was knocking down the door for him? Not even his own franchise, you know. So you know whether it's you know, the Panthers who let go of Thomas Brown, obviously, and I wouldn't advocate that because I feel like, you know, just watching Young, it didn't seem like he had any outlets on the blitz and didn't like to design the offense. The Eagles fired their offensive coordinator, Brian Johnson. He interviewed down here twice a year ago. You know, so there's going to be guys, right? But you know, when you think about it, for Dave Canales to get this job over the likes of, I don't know, guys that can really coach, you know, guys that have called plays before, you know, the Panthers interviewed these following guys for their head coaching job: Ben Johnson, the Ravens defensive coordinator, their offensive coordinator for the Lions, the Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. Ravens offensive coordinator Todd Monken, of course, we're familiar with. They interviewed the Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris. We'll talk to him in a minute. Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, former head coach of the Falcons. Texans offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick, who did such a good job with C.J. Stroud. And former Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, right? So all those guys came through Carolina, some of them twice, and it was Dave Canales, again, with a relationship. Big factor there, getting the head coaching job. So now the NFC South has taken on a Buccaneer flavor because it didn't stop there, okay? And again, I just to back up, I think replacing Canales, it could go in-house and, you know, along the lines of Thad Lewis. The Raiders have asked permission to interview Thad Lewis. So he's got possible options there. If the Bucs aren't interested in promoting him. So, want to talk about the NFC South? How about the Atlanta Falcons? They finally did it, man. They finally hired my man, Raheem Morris, after, 12, 14 years that he's waited between head coaching stints. gets the job back with the Falcons, where he was an interim head coach, where he has coached both offense and defense. Clearly knows, respects, love Arthur Blank, the owner there, Rich McKay, very familiar with. And this is like one of the most overdue hirings that there has been. And I don't know anyone that knows Raheem or covers the National Football League that doesn't think that he's ready, that he's paid his dues, that he's waited his time. Not many guys have coached receivers like Julio Jones and on the defensive side as well for the same franchise and been interim head coach and all those things he's done with the Rams as defensive coordinator, including winning a Super Bowl. This guy's resume is impressive. He's impressive. And like any coach, they need one thing, a quarterback. You know, he will fail if the Falcons are unable to find him somebody who can throw the football and be accurate and win. But he's got his chance, and I'm so happy for him. I don't root for teams. I root for people. I've known Rob for a long time. He's worked his ass off. He deserved this chance a long time ago. And it's hard to find anyone who knows him in the National Football League that isn't just thrilled that he finally got his shot. And we'll see what he does with it. He did a pretty good job as an interim coach. That's always a difficult situation, but now it's his baby. So a lot of news that has been breaking over the last few hours, last day since we last talked. Also, congratulations to Baker Mayfield. In addition to the great season, that has earned you a spot as a finalist in the Associated Press NFL Comeback Player of the Year. I never understood necessarily what the comeback player was about, because it begs the question, well, comeback from what? You know, it's like there's comebacks and there's comebacks, right? I think when I think of it, I think of injury mostly, but it can also just be bad play, poor luck, whatever. The other finalists, though, are Browns quarterback Joe Flacco, who got off the couch late, of course, and helped the Browns to the postseason where they lost in the first round of the Texans. Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford had a lot of arm trouble, came back, got them into the postseason. Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, same thing. Remember all the games he missed with the concussion issues and ever. And then there's a different category. And I'm sorry, but it's like, if we're really going to talk about comebacks here, how about this guy coming back from no pulse, right? Bill safety DeMar Hamlin, who, you know, again, not too many appearances during the regular season on Sunday with his team, but was on the team, was inactive a lot. I don't know how many games he played in. I think it was probably less than a handful. But for DeMar Hamlin to experience what he did and have the courage to get back on the football field and actually make it back to his NFL team, that is beyond anything that I see on this list. We'll see, though. I mean, I don't know who votes for it. I would assume NFL writers that are selected by the AP, so it could go any way. But the good news is that Baker Mayfield will take one more bow, and that'll be Super Bowl week out in Las Vegas on Thursday night at the NFL Honors Show, where you'll hear who the MVP is and the Coach of the Year and Walter Payton Award winner and all those things on that show, which is just great on Super Bowl Thursday night. So a lot to look forward to in that aspect. We'll talk, I'm sure, a heck of a lot more about the Bucs, about Raheem Morris, about what's going on in the league. Bill Belichick, it looks like that him and perhaps Mike Vrabel, there's only two teams left to hire a head coach, one of those being the Seattle Seahawks, and you've got three pretty good names, including Pete Carroll. So I don't know that any of those gentlemen have really interviewed with the remaining teams, but it's going to be something if a guy like Belichick suddenly has to hang up his whistle, because no one in the National Football League with this many openings, and Belichick interviewed twice in Atlanta, no one has hired the hoodie just yet, which is, you know, is telling. Not sure what it says, but it says something. So we'll talk a lot more about this, the weekend expires and we talk again on Sunday night. But what a day, with everything that's going on in sports, but the National Football League just a couple days removed from the Bucs playing their final game, have just suddenly a lot of pieces up in the air and things that they have to settle. But the first of which is, who's your coordinator, who's your quarterback, and who's going to re-sign Mike Evans, or are they going to re-sign Mike Evans? So we're just getting started, and we're only a couple days away from when they just played their final game. You know, for the past 14 years, the skilled pros at May Electric Solar have been installing solar energy systems throughout Florida. They provide the most reliable solar equipment, best installation methods, and service while helping homeowners cut energy costs with an environmentally friendly investment. Now, May Electric Solar uses their own skilled employees, never subcontractors, and they've always offered the safest and the most reliable equipment. Well, now May Electric Solar offers a 30-year no-cost equipment replacement and labor warranty. That means for 30 years, May Electric Solar, backed by Solar Insure, means that your roof, electrical, and equipment replacement is all covered. Solar Insure even survives May Electric Solar and is owned by the homeowner with no deductibles or additional fees. Now, this policy will transfer to a new homeowner with no fee. It's not a blanket insurance policy. In fact, only the best contractors are allowed to be part of its program. May Electric Solar's reputation and their history of workmanship has earned them this membership. To learn more about May Electric Solar's installation and their 30-year warranty, call 727-819-2862 or visit mayelectricsolar.com. All right. Well, y'all had a lot of questions, and we didn't get to those the other day, so we have a mailbag segment that you're going to enjoy, you're going to love. Lots of questions, of course, you would imagine about the Bucks, the NFL, the Lightning, who are on a good roll.
And then they'll have New Jersey Saturday, and then they take 10 days off for the All-Star break and bye week.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And that just means that no Bucks, no Lightning. Got to have to come up with some stories.
next week's going to be a little spring training, still 2 weeks away. A
little thin away, yeah. Anybody got some news, go call me. All right, or send me an email at, you know, rstroud@tampabay.com. We're looking for you to write about at this point. But that aside, those are champagne problems. I get it. Yeah, mailbag questions today. Let's get started, and I'm ready to go.
All right, we'll start with Joe, who asked, any chance the Glazers rethink their decision to keep Todd Bowles as head coach after the debacle at the end of the game?
I would say the chances are 1 in 100, 99% no. And I don't even know that there's really one, but listen, I think when we've talked about how Todd Bowles was definitely on the hot seat when you're 4-7 and you're in your second year, things are not looking good, they weren't going well, but for this team, this coach with a steady hand, not having too much emotion, which everybody complained about, is what got them through that stretch. And then they went on a roll when they needed to get hot at the right time in December. They did. So as far as the end of the game thing, best case scenario, okay, would have been that you tie the game. And it would have been one of those classic, right, finishes, because you don't have much time, even though they screwed up, you know, Detroit didn't run it out the way they should have. But let's say they missed the field goal, and field goals are missed all the time, and you got the ball at the plus 40-something or whatever. You know, are you going to go down there and score a touchdown? And even if you do, right, with no timeouts and 20-something seconds left, are you then going to score the two-point conversion? And even if you do, are you going to win the game, the coin toss, and win the game in overtime? There were so many variables, even if you do everything right. And yet, you know, there's definitely a part of you that says, wow, they gave up. Like, this was the team that never said die, and they went to the locker room with a timeout in their pocket that they can never use. So there's some of that. But as far as firing him for that decision, no, that's not going to happen, because he's the one that helped put them in that position to begin with. This team was about 13 minutes away for playing to go to the Super Bowl. That's how good they were. Underdogs for sure against the Lions. The atmosphere was insane. I've never heard it that loud. And I thought they did a good job with, you know, lack of false starts and things like that. But, I don't think it boils down to, well, Todd Bowles should have called timeout, because, again, everything would have to go right just to drag them into overtime, and you're not guaranteed a win. Was it a mistake? Absolutely. Should we make more of it than we did? I think so. But are the Glazers going to throw out the baby with the bathwater? No. They like what Todd Bowles represents. They have to like his team and the way they developed at a time when most teams would have just packed it in. So for all those things, there, to in my mind anyway, there's no chance that he's not back as head coach.
Kyle asks, is Baker Mayfield technically still under contract with the Buccaneers? And do they have the ability to re-sign him to an extension before the start of free agency? Same question for Mike Evans.
Yes and yes, actually. And in fact, there is a provision in their contracts that I think on or about February 19th, if they were to re-sign a new deal, I think some of the dead money that they have left on their deals would, you know, there'd be a helpful situation there. It's hard to know how soon this will happen, because on the one hand, let's play it out. You're going to help the team if you do a contract sooner than later. Absolutely. But if I'm Baker Mayfield or I'm Mike Evans and I've had the year I've had, and both guys would have liked to have more than 1 year left on their deal, they told Evans no, like, we're not doing it. Baker, though, is a free agent. Would he like to stay here under the same circumstances, including Mike Evans? I think so. And I think the Bucs would like to have him. But what's that number, right? Like, what's the number that gets you to go, I'm happy here, but I could be $10 million more happy there? Like, you know, it is a business. You're in a league where there's a lot of injuries. A lot of things can happen that won't be guaranteed. So the goal will be to re-sign Baker Mayfield before the free agent period starts. I just don't know that it's realistic, because unless they're in the ballpark of at least $30 to $35 million, I don't think it will. And that's just kind of the going rate for the guys that he played and some of the former first-rounders and things like that. I think he's helped himself, and I do believe he wants to be here. Those two things are major, because he's been with so many teams recently that he doesn't want to be that vagabond quarterback. He wants to settle down, loves Tampa, loves Tampa, loves his teammates. Teammates love him. It's hard to reestablish all that if you don't have to. And again, when two parties generally want the same thing, which is for Baker to be their quarterback, it's going to work out. So I'm not crazy freaking out about that one just yet.
Yeah, I think the timing will come down to, for the most part, players and agents and teams know what the value of players are based on the production.
Yeah, they do. They do, yeah.
If you make them a fair enough offer, and particularly if you sweeten the pot for Baker, let's say, and you say, hey, we're going to re-sign Mike, and here's a fair offer for him too. That may help things. You know, because I think the Bucs would like to do it sooner than later. I think it'll happen, whether it happens in February, whether it happens March, whatever, when free agency
after
starts.
After free agency, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of it just depends on, you know, how much leverage are you really looking at, you know. But, I like you said, I think it gets done, because I think both sides, Evans may be a little different, but I think Baker gets done for sure.
Yeah, because I think he wants stability, and I think he'd like to have it here. And I think, you know, the one thing he said after the game was, I'm just trying to imagine how much better I would be, how much better we would be, you know, with another year in the system with Dave Canales. And, you know, there were times when, you know, Baker made some throws, you go, I'm not sure what he's doing. Like, think about how far they came from week one, even, you know, until the other night. Think about Rashad White and how good he is, and, you know, some of the answers they came up with, you know, moving Chris Godwin. Like, this is a team that can do some stuff, but if you tell me Mike Evans isn't back, if you tell me Chris Godwin's in his last year, if you look at that schedule, and then here's the other question, Steve, that I don't really have an answer to. What if there's one team out there that says, yeah, Bake, $45 million, you've earned it. Come be my quarterback.
That's always possible.
He's a free agent, right? Yeah. It only takes one team. And right. God knows there's a lot of teams looking for quarterbacks right now.
Now, the one thing that could play into the Bucs' hands this year is, grant, the draft's after free agency. But there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this draft. It's a quarterback-heavy draft.
Yep.
And so you don't have to spend $45 million on a quarterback. You can go trade for a pick.
You can go young. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still got Kyle Trask, which I don't know what you think.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I don't know if there's as many teams willing to spend $45 million to go get Baker.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. So I'm saying that I think that plays in the Tampa Bay's favor.
Favor, yeah.
That I think there'll be less teams looking for big money free agent quarterbacks because this is a quarterback rich draft.
It is. And he's got competition as a free agent. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins, for example.
Yep.
I do think that Baker wants to be here. I think the Bucs want him to be here. And because of that, I think he will be, irregardless of sort of the other external factors.
Jerry asked, "Hey, Rick and Steve, now that the season is over, there's so much talk about free agents, but Baker Mayfield was sacked 40 times in the regular season play. Some of it was his fault, but Tampa could have lost both quarterbacks this year. You can only draft so much. Do they look for offensive line help in free agency?"
You always do. I mean, in free agency, the draft, post-draft, undrafted free agents, at the beach club. Like, you look for offensive linemen all the time. The salary cap is better this year for the Bucs. They're going to have some money to spend. I don't know that they're going to replace an offensive lineman necessarily. I think a couple things. You had five guys, most of which were in totally new positions. Ryan Jensen wasn't part of that group. And you had a new offense. And when they started out the season, they were doing a lot of zone runs and this and that. And it didn't look good. And then they kind of adjusted, you know. But yeah, there is a lot of free agents, and he was sacked a lot. Can you make yourself better in 1 year on the offensive line? I just think it's another more time on task. I think new offense. I think Baker took sacks he didn't need to. Look, when I talked to Thad Lewis, the number one thing he said that they have to work on if and when Baker Mayfield is back, it's not throwing the football, it's not understanding the offense, it's none of that. He said, we have had to teach him, ingrained in him, you can't take these hits. Like, you cannot put yourself in these situations where you're getting beat up like this. And that means all the extra sacks. You've got to find a way, you know, to shut it down. And if that's all you have to worry about because you think you know, he can learn that. But he was sacked a lot. Sacks very often are on the quarterback. They're on coverage, receivers failure to get open. I think their line will be better next year. I think they need it. Look, I like Robert Hainsey, but that wasn't the plan. Ryan Jensen has been the plan. I'm sure we have a question about him maybe down the line. But
yes, we do.
You need a center, probably one that's an upgrade from Robert, to be honest with you. And I'm not sure what Cody Mauch is just yet. He seems a little like Luke Getteke 2.0, where you took a tackle from a small college and put him at guard, and he struggled, right? So I don't know that they got it figured out. I mean, schematically, they did some things to improve the running game. But overall, it's not good. 40 sacks, if 10 of those are on the quarterback, then you're in a very respectable range. But yeah, you never want your quarterback getting hit that much, and the only way to improve it is to either develop those guys or get some better players.
Well, since you brought up Ryan Jensen, both Anad and Steve had tweeted questions. What's the status of Ryan Jensen heading into next season? Is he going to be able to play football again?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not a doctor, much less the guys that he saw, but I feel like the Bucs wanted Jensen around to help the offensive line in any way he could. And I also think that when you guarantee somebody that much money, you like to see him earn it somehow. But no, I don't think Jensen's going to play again. Look, he went for the whole sort of Hail Mary knee surgery deal where, you know, rather than go the conventional route, and maybe that would have helped or not. You know, when you start hearing things about embryos from cesarean babies in, you know, Antigua. I mean, come on, man. I hope it works, but it hasn't worked, and I don't think it's going to work. So I think we've probably seen the last of Ryan Jensen. You guaranteed him, what, 26 mil, whatever it was, and he didn't ever play a down, you know? It's sad, but that's just part of the NFL.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Michael asks, has there ever been a Bucks team that exceeded expectations more than this year's team?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and the closest thing I can come to is probably the 79 team. But even the 79 team, which, you know, you're sort of born of the, you know, the worst losing streak in NFL history, 0-26, and the, you know, the Johnny Carson jokes and all of that. I think the first time you win, there's a romanticized version of it that may or may not be in reality. But I do remember when Tony Dungy got here and they had had 12 double-digit losing seasons, which he added to. And then, you know, they managed to make the playoffs. Like, lo and behold, they're hosting the Detroit Lions. And then they beat them, and the fireworks are going off, and I'm standing next to Paul Gruber. That was a magical time. That was the last sort of Camelot period that you can remember. This may have rivaled it in the sense that there's zero expectations, right? And you're probably looking at a fairly high draft. And like, for them to come in here and thread this needle the way they did and stay relevant and win a playoff game and not have a bunch of guys pulling in different directions, not complain, not bitch about anything, I mean, it very well, if not the most successful, it's the most surprising season. And in a good way. Surprising that they shocked the world, you know, including Bucks fans. I don't think anybody saw that they had this in them and that they could execute. But in my mind, it did exceed everything that I would have expected. They're right there. If they're not one, they're 1A. You know, the other one being 97 in that. But the 97 team started out 5-0. So it wasn't like you didn't know they were great to start with. But that's still a bit of a caveat. But yeah.
There was a Raheem Morris year, the year they went 10-6. I mean, it wasn't this year, but no. They didn't make the playoffs in that. But no one expected 10-6 that year.
And Josh Freeman was 26 touchdowns, I think, and like 6 interceptions, you know. That's a good point. I mean, that was an incredible year and a better record. But yeah, pretty surreal performance, I think, by the Bucks this year. I didn't look at 4-7, man. no one's digging out of that in the NFL, and they did, and I give them all the credit in the world.
Kyle asks, will Jason Light consider bringing back guys like Whitehead and Edwards? Both of their contracts are expiring. Both are very familiar with the defense and takeaways, and there's a need at strong safety.
Yeah, I think Ryan Neal is done, and he looked awful when he had to play the other day. It was just can't change directions, way too stiff, not a good tackler, like so much that looked wrong there. Whitehead is interesting. I mean, he was that run thumper, you know, and still is, not necessarily the ball hawk type. I would lean towards him. Maybe then Edwards, who is just a center fielder, you know. I liked Whitehead. I felt bad when he got away. I remember him in the playoff game at Green Bay, and he was a load, and he was one of the big reasons why, you know, they won that game against the Packers. It's kind of hard to go home again, but it's always about money, and so can they afford him? Absolutely. I think it'd be a, you know, I think he'd be a great fit, and he'd fit right in that line. As far as Edwards goes, kind of a ball hawk, not necessarily a, you know, downhill safety. So he, to me, he seems less likely or less desired, maybe, than Whitehead would be.
Craig asks, the Rondé Barber pick six is the greatest play in Tampa Bay sports history. What is number two? Marty's OT winner in game six, Longo's 162 walk-off, Dan Johnson homer in 162, 91's or Steve, that's Steven Stamkos' one shift in the bubble goal, the Boulin wall save in game seven.
I don't even think this is a difficult question.
What about Brett Phillips in game four, the airplane?
You're going to keep going, aren't you?
I added that one in, but.
Yeah, it was a good one. Definitely my favorite moment. But I don't even know that this is really a tough question. Okay, Rondé Barber, for all the reasons we know, shut down the vet, got the Bucs to the Super Bowl. They won it. It was inevitable they were going to win it. Had filled every box in the stat sheet. Like, one of the greatest defensive games I've ever seen. Dan Johnson home run, dramatic, sure. Like, all of that's good. But to me, Marty St. Louis' goal won them a Stanley Cup. Like, they're going to lose to Edmonton in game six. They are. Or Calgary, I'm sorry, Edmonton. Calgary. They're going to lose to Calgary.
You can make an argument that that's the biggest goal. That's the biggest play in Tampa Bay sports history. And
bigger than Rondé Barber?
Well, but what? Tampa had the lead at that point in the game. Now, granted, Philly was driving, getting ready to score.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Marty was to win and extend a series.
The play that Rondé made got them to the Super Bowl, which became inevitable they would win.
I agree. It's the biggest
didn't
play.
Get them a championship.
Yeah, well, but Rondé's didn't did. Either. I mean,
yeah, neither one did. Yeah,
Marty's. I mean, if Calgary scores in that game, then Lightning go home and the season's over.
It's over. Yeah. So there's more pressure.
Both were eliminated. No, both were elimination games. I'm just saying that the Tampa actually had the lead at that point. I think Barber's is the greatest play in Tampa history, but Marty's is almost equivalent.
It's almost 1A. And not only that, but like that series, if you remember Jerome Iginla and how physical it was and just how they beat everybody up. I mean, those guys, the photo is great when they win the Stanley Cup. It looks like a bunch of dudes coming home from war or something. But the angle of that shot, like everything, I remember everything about it and how improbable it was. And then you just kind of knew that once they did that, they were going to win it. So yeah, but it's probably closer to 1A, 1B. I mean, a lot of the Rondé thing is, you're right, the game was mostly over, but what it symbolized is he's running down the sideline, looking at everybody in the eye and pointing to the back.
Yep.
It was that sort of like, oh yeah, because the Eagles fans were vile. They were just,
no.
I mean, I don't know how to describe. No. Oh God, the things they said. You know, Joe Giravicius lost a child, and at that point he wasn't, had not died, and he got there a day late. I mean, I could not imagine my worst enemy saying some of this stuff. That was interesting, you know, but. Yeah,
I'm just saying that the Marty's play is essentially the same scenario, or fairly close.
Well, one clinched it and one sent it back.
Well, but
to Tampa
one clinched to the Super Bowl. Marty's clinched a Game 7 winner take all. I mean,
it's basically
clinching one more game to win it. They both. That's what I'm saying is.
Yeah.
You know, if Rondé's was in the Super Bowl itself, it would be clear number one over Marty's because it would won the one.
No, it's a great point. I never thought of it in terms of they kind of both did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, you handed a trophy to when it was over.
Right. Well, you handed a trophy. But yeah.
They're going to the Super Bowl, and the other one was.
You were already in the finals.
But, you're already there. Yeah.
But had you not scored that goal, then your season's over.
You're done.
You know, that goal forced one more game to win it all.
All right. So, you know what? I think it's a great argument. I think maybe we've overlooked Marty. So, I mean, really. I just remember the angle of this goal. Like, it was so improbable that he got that, and I had some friends over, and I have high roofs, but I swear that we all hit them at the same time. Like, we jumped so high when that was a great series. Ruslan Fenitenko, all the beatings he took every day.
Scored the two goals in the game seven.
Javi Bulin, like the Bulin wall. Like, there's such character on that team. It's pretty awesome. I like hockey. It's, you're never going to get me to say otherwise. So,
speaking of Lightning then, Tommy asks, how many players on the current Lightning team could you see their numbers retired next to Vinny LeCavalier and Marty St. Louis when their careers are done in the Amalie Arena rafters?
Ooh, that's a good one. All right, let's go. So, Vinny and Marty, so...
I think there's four.
We'll go Stamkos, Hedman.
Yes.
Kucherov.
Yes.
And I'm going to say Point.
Point questionable at this point.
Oh, wait a minute. The goaltender, obviously.
Yes,
did I say Vasi?
Yes.
Yeah, Vasi's a nomad. I think... So, okay, so those are your four. And then I would say, I think Point has a chance to get there.
I agree.
He's not there yet. You can't say definitively, oh, he's in the Ring of Honor. He's not that guy.
Look, they'll make the Lightning Hall of Fame, which they've just started and they're inducting.
Yes,
this is year two where Dave Andrechuk and Brad Richards will go in.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these guys are going to go into the Hall of Fame. Like,
yes.
Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat and,
right.
You're going to go through all Alex Killorn. You're going to go through all these guys. But to retire numbers.
That's got to be special.
All the guys in Lightning history, there's two that are retired. And,
right.
And I don't know if there's anybody. I don't know if they'll retire another one that's not on this current team.
Well, I mean, you're looking at, okay, who are my all-stars? Who's made the all-star team that's, mm-hmm. Still here?
Point has made the All-Star game once or maybe twice.
Yeah.
But, Stamkos owns pretty much every franchise record
there is, yeah.
And Hedman, for defenseman, owns basically every record. Vazzy's the greatest goalie in the team's history, no question, and maybe the greatest goalie in the game right now, and has been for several years. And then Kucherov is maybe the best player in the NHL.
I say, look, retire them all. These guys went to three Stanley Cups and won two of them. I think
they went to
all
four.
Worthy.
They went to four.
They went
the
to four. You're right.
One.
Yeah, Chicago.
Well,
you're right.
Bishop was the goalie back then, but the other ones were there.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And the run's not done. Who knows how many more they go to?
Well, look, they're right back there again.
I think four get retired from this team. There's a possibility of Point. There's a possibility of Sergachev.
Right.
And like I said, I think they'll all be in the Hall of Fame at some point. Or, the Bucks have the Ring of Honor, Lightning have started a Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
They'll all be, so much of this core is going to end up in that thing. And they should. This has been a 10-year run for this core.
It's unbelievable that they've kept it together that long. Nobody does, right?
And cap. Knowing the last 4 years have been a flat cap.
Right. That's right.
Not just a hard cap.
The money they lost in 2020,
but
right?
Yeah. So it's, I think those four will end up being retired.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great guess. I think you're right. And there's a lot more that might become worthy after that. But, yeah, those four seem to be sort of no-brainers. All right.
Well, one more quick question here.
You got one more? Yeah, okay.
Yep. Scotty asks, what surprises you more, USF football or USF men's basketball success this season?
I mean, define success. They beat Memphis, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Most surprising, USF basketball, because I think there's always a chance you can come in and with the right recruiting in Florida, you won six games. Yay, which is awesome, right? But basketball, which has never been a great sell here, that upset was impressive because they were down 20. And these dudes just have another gear. So whatever that coach is telling them, they're buying in. Like, that's, mm-hmm. to me, that's the biggest buy-in team that we've seen in a while at USF. So just completely off the radar, in my opinion. I think it's USF basketball.
I'll go the opposite. I'll say football. And because I think it's harder to turn a football team around.
Because
53 or 100 guys on the roster, NFL's 50. 100 guys on the roster compared to 12.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, look, what Adore Raheem is doing it for USF men's basketball, it's great. And it's Brian Gregory may be a really good coach. But, man, his style of basketball to watch was hard. It was painful at times. Like, this team's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is.
Like, they get up and down the floor. They hustle. They play good defense. You know, I, if you're going to be a middle of the pack team, and that's obviously not their goal, but, you know, I'd rather watch a competitive style of basketball and a fun style than grind it out and trying to win 41-40 every night.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'd rather have, let's run up and down the court. Let's put some shots up. Let's be excited. You know, I mean, you got to play to the type of players you got, of course, but I think both programs have been a surprise this year with new coaches, and kudos to Michael Kelly and the whole athletics organization over there. It seems to have found two really good coaches.
No, that's true. There's not a bad choice there. All right, great questions as usual. We got a pretty interesting weekend coming up, the Lightning against the Devils. That one's always great. And then, of course, we have conference championship games. To me, the week before, I love the divisional playoffs. I mean, there's so many, there's more games, but now this is it. Somebody's going to go to the Super Bowl, actually two teams, headed out to Las Vegas after this one.
And
so,
will the Lions, for the first time in history, go to one?
Listen, I'll say this. San Francisco better be on their game. They better not take those guys lightly. I know they won't take them lightly, but they can't afford to make mistakes. You know, if Deebo Samuel plays, I think they're one team. If he doesn't, I think they're another team. I think the Lions are vulnerable in the secondary, in the back end. You can make plays against those guys, but they're going to play hard. They're going to play long. It's going to be, it's going to be a dogfight. I mean, that's going to be a good game. And then Baltimore taking on Kansas City. I mean, what if Patrick Mahomes goes back to another Super Bowl? What are we watching, the modern day Tom Brady here?
Well, by the point in his age, he's ahead of Tom Brady in almost every category playoff wise.
Right. Right.
Except number of Super Bowls.
Right.
Because Brady had three by this point.
Right. Well, this would be his.
This is what, their sixth third? Straight conference championship game?
That's stupid.
Now, granted, a lot of times they get the bye and only have to win one game to get to that game.
That's fine.
But still.
That's how you get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's just showing up, and it doesn't, like, the one, like, and I don't think that was a great Buffalo defense, but they're kind of not very good on the outside for Mahomes in Kansas City, and yet.
Although they're going up against a real defense this week.
Yeah, they are. They really are. This defense is no joke. I mean, I think I got Lamar and those guys winning that game. I think Baltimore is going to be stronger, especially at home. And even if they're not great on offense, their defense will keep them in it. I think if Brock Purdy gets behind, has to try to bring him back, it's going to, not against that defense.
You mean Mahomes?
Mahomes, yeah. Well, Mahomes can do it.
Yeah.
But with that group of receivers, I don't know that I trust them. They caught the ball the other day. Kelsey had two touchdowns.
Just don't give it to Mecole Hardman.
Oh, no kidding.
Not
well, Mahomes, man. Mahomes is he just keeps showing up in these games. Yeah. You know, like, you can't kill him. He's going to be right back in it again, and here he is.
Will Jason Kelsey be there shirtless?
That was a little weird for me. Like, that was a little over the top, even for Jason, who had to be hammered.
My favorite is his mother was dying laughing at it, and apparently his wife was not amused.
No. She gave it that look that you get, like, oh, okay, here he goes. The look of the clown. Yeah, I married one of those guys. Yep, here he goes. She'd seen it before. She had that look like, oh, boy, we can't reel him back in. But you know what? Those guys are laughing all the way to the bank, him and Travis. And at least we haven't heard whether Travis is coming back next year. Really, I think Kelsey, even though he told his teammates that he was done, he kind of putting off the official announcement, whatever that means. So, yeah, good games this weekend, and we'll be back to talk about him on Monday. Thanks for listening. For Steve Bursnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.